Henry, what's holding you up? Let's get on with the show. We can't hang around here all day.
Thank you for joining us for episode 14 of The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Alex Stewart.
And I'm Harrison Ownby, and we're thrilled to begin Series 3 of our podcast. Series 1 covered the high-flying hijinks of Adventureland. Series 2 covered the Disneyland-exclusive New Orleans Square. And now, we're pleased to present to you Series 3. Alex, will you do the honors?
With pleasure. Folks, we're going to be kicking off Series 3 by covering one of the quaintest cul-de-sacs in all of Disneyland. That's right, folks. We are going to be covering Critter Country next.
Critter Country. This folksy land is home to Splash Mountain, the mini adventures of Winnie the Pooh, and Davy Crockett's Explorer canoes. And guess what, Al?
Let me guess. It has a rich history?
It has a rich history.
I nailed that one.
You nailed it, but before we get into the history of Critter Country, we should listen to something that gets us in the mood and cadence of this sleepy little holler nestled deep in the southwest corner of Disneyland. I have the perfect piece to put us in that mood. And it's funny, because my old teepaw used to live in an old holler carved out in an old walnut grove right outside of Brer Beaver's property on the back edge of Critter Country. When we moved her into Miss Maisie's Butterfield's old folks' den to convalesce, I found this old record in her garage.
Wait, your teepa?
Yeah, my teepa. You know, your great Pee-Pew's Opa's favorite Nina? That's your teepa. And folks, if you don't know your teepa, well, you better slow down and enjoy the simpler things in life. Anyway, Al, you gotta listen to this record. It displays a little slice of that signature Critter Country culture that makes this place so charming. Take a listen.
Welcome to Critter Country Corner, where Critter Country common folk tell their favorite Critter Country capers. Brought to you by Bear Necessities brand beehives, who remind you to house your bees with Bear Necessities, because happy bees make the sweetest honey. Today's Critter Country Corner is hosted by the one and only Cletus Kershaw.
Cletus Kershaw here. This incident reminds me of sitting on the crew ma's porch in the Old South. She used to put in a plug of charter backer and sit in a rocker on her front porch and watch the world lose its mind. Well, one hot summer day, she was a-rockin' and a-sittin' and a-spittin', and the old mailman, Jimbo Bear, he come up the way and hand her one of them catalogs. You ever heard of one of them things, folks? Well, inside was all these pictures and numbers and whatnot. She just about spit out her teeth. She yell after old Jimbo,
"What you just hand me, Jimbo?"
And old Jimbo, he was always a little slow after he done fell out of that tree. He say,
"Well, I don't rightly know myself, but I used to ran that watering hole, but this is one of them things called a catalog."
Prue almost jumped out her coveralls.
"What for you giving me this catalog for?"
And old Jimbo, he kind of fumbled for his words, and he say,
"Well, I reckon it's from old Gomer's General Store. If when you see something you want, you'll send a letter out with some money and old Gomer will mail it to you."
Well, of all the tomfoolery I ever done heard, this year's the tomfooleryest. Listen, Jimbo, all I's got to do when I want to get something from Gomer's General Store is spit, hit that weather vane up there yonder, which spins and opens the gate to let the hound dog out. And a hound dog chases the cat round a haystack, which makes the rooster dizzy from all the watching the cat, and the rooster falls over. So the hen gets all fussy and flies off and makes a nest in Gomer's head. Then old Gomer come a-running, since I'm the only one who can get that hen out of his hair. And then we conduct business.
Oh, shucks, that don't make no sense to me.
The point is this, Jimbo. I need this catalog about as much as a mama sow need a tuxedo. Now go on, take this whole thing back.
And old Jimbo shuffles over to Kruma and he takes the catalog back. He don't know what to do since ain't nobody ever give him a catalog back. Back then, catalogs was in high demand. And Jimbo was slow, but he look around for a little bit and he sees all of Kruma's critters and he say something I ain't never forget.
"Well, I suppose when you got all them critters to help you, that's all you need."
Kruma was kind of surprised by his simple old folk wisdom, but she look at him and a nod, and he a nod, and, well, they understand. Life is simple, and anything what keeps you from the critters and the critters from you ain't nothing but a complication. And I don't know about you city folk, but I reckon life's got enough complications on its own. So with that, I'm going to go sit in my rocking chair and a rock and a sit and a spit and watch the world lose its mind, just like my old crewma used to.
Wow. That was something else, Harry. I'm searching for a lesson, and I'm assuming we have to boil life down to the bare necessities?
That's definitely one thing you could take away from it. I think the moral of the story is don't hoard mail order catalogs, folks.
It's a good lesson to learn. Good lesson, folks.
A hard lesson.
So now that we've listened to the awful record to set the mood, let's look into the history of this woodsy, folksy North American corner of the happiest place on earth. Now, Critter Country has roots back in Disneyland when it opened in 1955.
When Disneyland opened, it was a snapshot of life in the 50s, and 50s kids knew that any theme park worth its salt needed a Western wilderness theme. Disneyland addressed this with a little area called Indian Village, which nestled nicely in Frontierland.
Now, folks, before we get into this deeply, I don't want to sound like we're offending anybody with this possibly controversial Indian Village. That is the actual name that Disneyland used for the area, so that's what we're going to be using for the name of the village. So hopefully nobody gets offended by that, and if you do get offended by that word, I'm sorry. Blame Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, hashtag blame Margaret Thatcher.
She's the one who did this to us. Not really she quite did. Sure who Margaret Thatcher is, but I think she was the...
It's all her fault. I think it's Helen Mirren. She's the same person.
So anyway, Frontierland at this time was a Roy Rogers fan's dream come true. An Indian village set the scene of a vision of the Wild West now long forgotten, but one that was alive and well in the early 1950s. Those boys and girls who played cowboys and Indians and watched famous westerns on their black and white TVs with plastic six-shooters tucked into their homemade holsters were in heaven in this portion of the park.
Indian Village portrayed Native American life in the 1800s and was populated by teepees, a burial ground, a life-sized buffalo you could put your kids on and take buffaloes of, take pictures of too, and there was a ceremonial dance circle with shows. And the performers were real Native Americans as recruited by the Walt Disney Company to give the land an authentic feel. You could even have a conversation with a full-blooded Native American chief. Yes, this was definitely a 50s kid's dream come true.
But Indian Village was only in Frontierland for about a year. By 1956, it had moved across the way from Frontierland on the other side of the rivers of America. Now, as an aside, I think the best way to think about what an experience in this Indian village is like would be something akin to a modern-day reenactment of sorts, if anybody's ever been to one of those.
It didn't have, like, any attractions or anything, but it made you just kind of leave your inhibitions of that you're in 1950s Anaheim, and suddenly you're in the plains Old West.
Exactly. The goal of this entire land was to make you feel like you were immersed in a section of history.
Yeah, it was definitely it was an immersion land, not really a theme, well, like a attraction land.
Exactly. And from this new location, guests also had access to the rivers of America. With this new river access, Imagineers, not called Imagineers at that time, opened an exciting new attraction, the Indian War Canoes. This D-ticket attraction gave guests an opportunity to explore the rivers of America in a real canoe with a real Native American cast member as their guide.
I can only imagine how exciting that would be to experience as a kid in the 50s. I keep coming back to how awesome this would be as a kid in the 50s, but seriously, maybe, I mean, you look at things like Toy Story and Woody and Buzz, and the cowboys were so big back then.
Oh, yeah.
So as a kid, you're paddling down the rivers of America, and you're imagining that it's the Mississippi River or something else. You've got the paddle in your hand, and the sun's shining down on you, and the wind is on your face as you row through the river, and then a real Native American guide is showing you sights such as Tom Sawyer's Island and the Old Mill.
And after you finished your keelboat guided tour, you could participate in a dance at the ceremonial dance circle, or shop for handmade Native American artifacts at the Indian Trading Post, or you could explore teepees with painted stories inside, furnished with Native American artifacts. Here's an example of a 1956 sign outside of one of those teepees.
This is an authentic reproduction of a typical encampment of Plains Indians and their way of life during the years when the white man first entered the vast Indian territory of the West. The teepees are decorated with symbols and figures telling of important family and tribal events or great battles. All of this Indian equipment was created especially for the new Walt Disney feature motion picture, Westward Ho the Wagons. I have never heard of Westward Ho the Wagons. Honestly, growing up in the 80s and 90s, I missed most of the Western stuff. For me, it was all robots, mutants, and micro machines.
Yeah, I haven't seen nor actually even heard of Westward Ho the Wagons. Apparently, it's a 1956 movie about a bunch of sweaty pioneer families making their way westward. But they're beset on the way by a hostile Pawnee tribe. There's a lot more to the story, but, you know, spoilers.
It kind of reminds me of the story of the proud but stubborn Stuart pioneers who were making their way to Reno because they heard that city had the cheapest buffets, but they were beset on all sides by hippies and indigestion from their own dietary decisions, which were poor.
Now, that story mirrors the heart of many American experiences, okay? So, step off. And I know the heat exhaustion made my brother think that he was a warm buttered French baguette for 48 absolutely miserable hours, but dude, you have to admit that Reno has some ridiculously cheap buffets.
I don't think your brother ever fully came out of that, by the way.
He actually is still, every morning, wakes up and takes a butter tub.
Yeah, he still asks me to get that spot on his back that he can't quite cover with butter. Anyway, as we said, the Wild West craze sweeping America was huge at the time of the creation of Disneyland, and Walt's own love for the heart of the Wild West fueled the fire for how popular this land was. And it's crazy because this was also around the time that Davy Crockett was huge, due in large, large part to Walt Disney's influence. In fact, by the end of the 1950s, Americans had purchased an unprecedented $300 million in coonskin caps. Which, that's in 50s money there.
Yeah, so. I was reading an article that said that it was $2.8 billion today. Is
$2.8 billion of coonskin caps.
I know, isn't that incredible?
And yet we still have raccoons digging through our garbage.
I'm severely doubting that they were actually made out of real raccoons.
That's a shame. Anyway, by the mid-50s, Westerns declined in popularity, and as the culture started moving away from Old West stories, Indian Village became less and less of a draw for crowds.
Plus the fact that it was tucked way back in a corner of Disneyland, and people just weren't visiting that part of the park anymore. For all of those who have been to the park, you can definitely understand that Disneyland has an amazing flow to it, that for the most part, you never really have to backtrack anywhere except for when you go to two different places. One is Toontown, and the other one is Critter Country. So a lot of people didn't make the trek back that way, I think for that very reason, because they didn't want to have to backtrack. It's kind of interesting that the Indian Village was one of the less expensive lands also to build back in 1956. It actually cost only $100,000, all said and done. Now, compare that to lands like New Orleans Square, which weighed in at $18 million. And then you also put that in, I believe that Disneyland as a whole in 1955 was built for $17 million. So, wow. Yeah, you can see that was just a small chunk of it. And needless to say, that's why it was starting to look dated also.
So the Imagineers looked to Disney World in Florida for an attraction that would draw crowds back into that area of the park. And they looked at this little attraction called the Country Bear Jamboree. It was hugely popular in Frontierland in the Magic Kingdom, so they decided to take a cue from the pioneers and move it westward to Disneyland.
Now, also, just to frame the time of this, this was post-Walt Disney. Walt Disney had passed away in 1966, and this was, I believe, around 1970-ish, 1969, mm-hmm. that they started to see that this whole process over on the Indian Village side wasn't really sticking with people. And so that's when they really started to see. Walt Magic Kingdom opened in, what, 73?
Oh, man.
Was it?
Early 70s, yeah. I couldn't tell you exactly the year.
Yeah, so you see that there's this big chunk of time where they're really trying to figure everything out
in that
area.
Yeah, like what would have Walt done?
So, yeah, so needless to say, they jumped over to see what was popular in their new park, and that was this Country Bear Jamboree. I think we need to take a little detour here to talk about this attraction because there's a really interesting story behind it. This attraction was, did I say intraction?
You said intraction, but...
This attraction is intraction. I'm sorry, man, but I don't think it's going to make it. Sorry. Okay, let's try that again, folks. The attraction was envisioned by Walt Disney himself and assigned to Disney legend Mark Davis, who helped design basically everything awesome in Disneyland. The Tiki Room, the Jungle Cruise, Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean, among tons of other attractions.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about Mark Davis in our podcast because every time you look into the history of a ride, his name tends to come up. And we've looked at it so much that we are starting to see little smatterings of Mark Davis around the park. Once you kind of get a feel for his tone, you can see his sense of humor everywhere. He was the kind of guy that he decided to make the Jungle Cruise a joke. He made the gags in Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean. He's got a very distinct sense of humor, and the birds and the Tiki Room and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Now, believe it or not, this attraction wasn't actually originally intended for one of the two theme parks. No, Walt had bigger ideas for these bears. For a while up to this point, Walt had actually been diversifying his creativity as well as his investments, not only monetarily, but with his time. Walt had acquired ownership of an indoor water park here in Denver and was also well into planning to build a Disney ski resort in the Mineral King Valley in California. It was in the lodge of the Mineral King Ski Resort that Walt intended to place the Country Bear Jamboree. Now, a lot of people think that, hey, Alex, you live in Denver, you gotta be like a ski bum. And the answer is no, not at all. I haven't been...
Yeah, we both grew up in Denver and we don't ski.
I think the last time I was skiing was probably 15, 20 years ago. But if there was a Country Bear Jamboree inside of the lodge of the place I was skiing, I would definitely go to the ski resort. Not necessarily
not to ski,
to ski,
but just to sip sit in hot cocoa while you sip hot cocoa and listen to the country
bears. It's an immersive experience.
Well, you could just sit in a giant cup and then just dip your mouth below and take a sip.
There's a reason why that didn't actually work out, because 17 people died of communicable diseases out of the 17 people who tried it.
That's the ultimate hedonism right there.
I will drink my own bathwater.
Which is hot chocolate while I listen to these bears perform.
I apologize for nothing.
So, going back to talk about that water park in Denver,
yeah.
There's a place called Celebrity Sports Center, I think, right? I only learned that from you last night, but I've been to Celebrity many times before. They had this cool, kind of atomic-looking, pointy star mid-century sign that really stood out.
Yeah, oh, it was an awesome place. Kids loved it from miles and miles around, but I think it ended up closing down, I want to say, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Early 90s. I remember going there one time, and the water slide, there was big water slides into a pool, and they were tons of fun. But I remember getting so cold there, like my lips were blue, and my mom says, we have to get out. And I'm like, no, I want to ride this slide again. And then pretty soon after, it closed. But I also kind of remember that it was looking a little run down at that time.
Oh, definitely. I think that it actually hadn't been serviced since Walt saw it back in 1966.
Yeah, it was definitely like taken over by like Iago or something. It's just like, I just want the money.
We're not gonna do it.
Yeah.
Go down the slide when it's dry.
We don't pay to heat this water. That costs money, and that means I don't have as much.
Oh, man. So we could devote the entire episode to this resort that was never meant to be, but suffice to say that the project never came to fruition for a number of reasons.
I hope someday that Disney does open a ski resort somewhere, because that idea is still good. And maybe they will put the bears in the... Maybe they'll listen to this podcast and realize, you know what? There's something to that hot cocoa tub.
Now, that's an idea.
Now, there's an idea that's bankable.
Put that in there with the barbershop.
Well, I'm sure they've got plans lying around.
Oh, yeah.
But the Country Bear Jamboree emerged from the remains of this Mineral King Valley project and came to rest in Frontierland in the Magic Kingdom in Orlando, where it still runs to the very day of this recording.
Yeah, it's interesting because Country Bear Jamboree was always packed in Florida from the day it opened. It was probably because of its success that the Imagineers were inspired to build the attraction in Anaheim as well. But due to the success of the show in Florida, Imagineers thought it would be a great idea to build two identical Country Bear Jamboree theaters in Anaheim so they could handle twice the crowds. The team believed that the Singing Bears was going to finally be the attraction that made that part of the park come alive again. This move to plant Country Bear Jamboree in Anaheim is a significant point in Disney history as well, because it was the first attraction that was opened at Disney World and then replicated back at Disneyland instead of vice versa.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to see how these big projects feed into each other.
Yeah.
But Imagineers knew that Country Bear Jamboree wouldn't really fit into Indian Village, so they spent about $8 million in the early 70s to bring Bear Country to life.
So, Helly, Helly.
Helly. Okay. Helly, how are ye?
So, Helly, will you tell us how they changed Indian Village into Bear Country?
Yeah, it was a complete overhaul. The teepees, dance circle, and burial ground were all removed. Only the Indian Trading Post and the Indian War Canoes remained. The Indian War Canoes were renamed Davy Crockett Explorer Canoes, but the attraction stayed fundamentally the same except for the cast member guide. You'd have a Davy Crockett-type guide instead of a Native American guide. So when you stepped into Bear Country for the first time, you'd see maroon pavement, a sign that said, Bear Country, a honey of a place since 72. And you'd hear old Rufus the Sleeping Bear sawing logs nearby. They also opened the mile-long bar, a snack bar that had mirrors running the length of the bar, which made it look like it stretched on forever. And one of the more charming spots was Teddy Bear's swinging arcade. Swingin' arcade, excuse me.
Get that right.
Yeah, it's the difference between swinging and swingin'. And that stayed open until 2003. And in the 70s, it featured a delightful assortment. I don't know why this cracks me up so much. A delightful assortment of mechanical games, such as Hoof and Henry, a puppet you could control with buttons. So you'd put a quarter in, and you'd make Hoof and Henry tap dance to bluegrass medleys that played when you put a coin into the machine.
I think the mental image of that whole execution is what's best, especially when Hoof and Henry became self-aware and just really started hating the controllers of him.
Yeah, like, I just picture some bratty kid putting, like, a quarter in there and being like, Hoof it, Henry, and then just hitting the buttons as fast as he can, and Henry's just like, I will find you when I get rid of these strings hold me down.
Do you ever feel like the corporate world is the child with coins and you're Hoof and Henry?
I have definitely felt like Hoof and Henry. Yeah, you press a button and you tap dance to these bluegrass medleys we set out for you, or else you don't pay your rent. You don't like dancing? Well, I bet you won't like homelessness either.
Oh, it's so depressingly true.
So, you could also go across the way if you were feeling lucky and brave a pistol duel with old Johnny Rio. Johnny Rio was a fast-talking, wise-cracking, life-sized animatronic man who used infrared sensors to challenge passerbys to a pistol duel. If Johnny beat you, he wouldn't stop smart-talking about how bad of a shot you were. Whoa! What was that?
Hey, buckaroo. What's all this talk about infrared sensors? I used pure instinct to take down every tenderfoot who was brave or fool enough to step into bars.
Whatever, Johnny. There's no way instinct could make you that fast.
That's Señor Rio to you, greenhorn, and let me tell you, it was instinct. An instinct given to me by my ancestor, the Great Rattlesnake. I ain't never been slow, and I ain't never gonna be slow.
Watch it, Rio! You near took off my toe with that shot!
If I wanted your toe off, it'd be off, Tinkerbell.
Look, Rio, I ain't looking for a fight.
What's the matter, you chicken?
No, it's a... Wait, no one ever calls me chicken. All right, Rio, you've got your fight. Right here, right now.
Hey, dude. Can you even shoot a pistol?
Well, I guess we're gonna find out.
All right, you cross-eyed prairie gopher. When that there clock on the clock tower hits high noon, we shoot. The last man standing, well, is the last man standing.
I've heard enough out of you, you old sorry excuse for an audio animatronic.
Oh, that was fast.
Harry! Harry, you did it! You were a faster shot than Johnny Rio!
Well, that's what a childhood of friendlessness and an endless supply of quarters at the arcade for Time Crisis 2 will get you.
Well, I guess some people need to be reminded that they're no good without their IR sensors, you know? No? No? No?
Ow. 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 Hey! Dude, wake up! We're recording, Al. What's going on?
Dude, I just had the greatest dream. In the dream, it was you against Johnny Rio outside of Teddy Barra's place, and you beat him!
Oh, man. Well, it sounds like your dream went a lot better than this episode is. But,
it definitely was. Better than any of our episodes, actually.
Well, maybe we should just make a podcast about your dreams.
One day. My dream is to make a dream podcast about my dreams.
And only dream about it. What?
Oh, Dreamception Pod, Dreamception Cast.
Well, I don't know how to get back on topic, but now, speaking of Dreamception, let's talk about Teddy Barra. She's from the Country Bear Jamboree Show. She is the chubby bear on a swing with a parasol who cracks wise like Mae West. I didn't really know who Mae West was, by the way, but she's kind of she's the old timey person, like, well, why don't you come up and see me sometime? Or like,
what or, a one liner.
Yeah. When I'm good, I'm bad, but when I'm bad, I'm even better. Stuff like that. So she's kind of like the, I'd rather be looked over than overlooked, huh, boys? So speaking of shops in Bear Country, which we weren't talking about, but there's also...
Good segue.
Thanks. Segues are what I do best, just like Mae West. Speaking of, I'd rather be speaking of a shop than shopping to speak. What do you say, boys? Who's got my first drink? So there was also Ursus H. Bear's Wilderness Outpost, where you could get all your bear merchandise.
And believe it or not, Bear Country also occasionally had live square dancing. Sometimes in the evening or afternoon, characters from all over the park, and of course familiar favorites from the Country Bear Jamboree, would gather around for a country hoedown with guests. If you found time between Churnin' Butter and Whistlin' Dixie, well, maybe you could dance for just a few numbers. The only problem was that the location where they had these dances was apparently located right outside of the bathrooms in Bear Country, so you would walk out of the bathroom and be immediately thrown into like this square dance.
Speaking of bathrooms, Bear Country has the largest bathrooms in all of Disneyland.
That is some trivia you can take to the bank. And I'm sure that it was definitely because they wanted to accommodate the anticipated throngs of people who showed up for Bear Country, right?
Yeah, they really thought that Bear Country would slam that area of the park. So they built a huge restaurant. I think it was called the Golden Bear, but now it's the Hungry Bear. But it's huge. And enormous bathrooms, because they thought that the Country Bear Jamboree would just be a nonstop draw.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they even equipped the entire land with all these different features. There was a bluegrass band there. They were called the Bluegrass Band Boys, and they were a band that included a few humans and a few of the good old bears from the Country Bear Jamboree. You could occasionally find them here and there, picking and a-grinning. And after Big Thunder Mountain opened in 1979, the band became the Big Thunder Boys. The happy toe-tapping tunes these boys played were sure to put a spring in your step.
Well, the Country Bear Jamboree finally opened, and it was successful at first, but it started to die down, and it never did as well in California as it did in Florida. And
now, real quick, the one thing that I was listening to this guy named Jim Hill on the Disney Dish podcast, and he brought up a really good point.
He's a Disney historian.
An amazing podcast if y'all get a chance to listen to it. Honestly, it's... It kind of hurts your brain how much this dude knows
about. And it's like insider knowledge. It's not something, because we've scoured the
corners of the web looking for stuff, and he's got stuff that I didn't even find, like, a scent of.
Yeah, well, and it's crazy because he was saying that the reason why it didn't do well is because of the fact that Disneyland is a regional park. Essentially, the majority of people who come to Disneyland are from within 100 miles of Disneyland.
Yeah, he said it was the world's most famous regional park, I think was the wording that he used. I'm like, oh, that's really well put.
Harry, I've lost you completely.
Say something, I'm giving up on you.
Can you hear me now?
You disappeared.
Oh, Skype.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Anyway, but were you going to say anything else about Jim Hill?
Well, no, I was just going to say before my mic cut out.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Harry cut out on Skype, folks. So I was scared because he had disappeared. But I was just saying that Jim Hill was talking about how the fact that it was a regional park gave people no reason to come back.
Yeah.
To see it again because they would come back so frequently that they didn't forget what it was like to watch the Country Bear, so they had no reason to revisit it, and that's why it really eventually died off so quickly.
Well, it's kind of like history repeating itself because that's one of the reasons why Jungle Cruise was rewritten to include more jokes. Mm-hmm. Because the legend is that Walt saw a mother and child outside of Jungle Cruise, and the kid asked if they wanted the mother if she wanted to ride the ride again, and she said, well, we've already seen it. And so and I think that's something that they're always thinking as Imagineers, like, we don't want to build attractions that are just the same experience every time. We want something that adds and adds and adds. And I think that's something that Country Bear Jamboree worked in Florida, because people would see it once and it was great. It was an awesome show. You could even see it a couple times and still pick it all up. But by the time you'd seen it three or four times, you know, it's kind of like, it's a 15-minute show. It's kind of a little slow. I mean, that's the way that the whole thing is kind of paced, because it's the bear's way of life is slow. But anyway, it's just kind of interesting to see how the geographic location and the mindset of people affects the kinds of rides that they build. And sometimes an attraction that works in one park may not work in the other park.
Absolutely. And by the 80s, Bear Country had become about as sleepy as Rufus the Sleeping Bear.
Imagineers toyed with trying to breathe new life into the attraction by adding four new shows that would coincide with four major holidays, but the idea was quickly shelved. The Imagineers realized that thrill rides tended to draw bigger crowds. They had roller coaster thrill rides in the park, but they didn't have a flume ride. So Imagineers decided to make a log flume ride and build a ride as the area's lead attraction.
Now, with this, it required another land change. So Bear Country easily transitioned into Critter Country in 1988 to ramp up for Splash Mountain, which opened a year later. It was more of an enrichment of the land than an all-out overhaul, since bears are critters too. One thing that changed was critter homes started popping up in Bear Country, and the mile-long bar closed. Traditional video games replaced some of the mechanical ones in Teddy Bar's Swingin' Arcade, and sadly, I think Hoof and Henry disappeared.
He's probably in your closet right now.
I'm pretty sure he's actually the subject of the latest Goosebumps novel.
Or what's the Five Nights at Freddy's?
That's who Hoof and Henry is?
That's who Hoof and Henry is now.
Oh, man. FNAF fans, go crazy with your fan theories.
Yeah.
So the Indian Trading Post became the Briar Patch. They also sadly woke up poor Rufus the Sleeping Bear and made him sleep somewhere else. Although you can hear tribute to the old guy in Splash Mountain, as you pass Brer Bear's cave, you hear this familiar snoring sound.
In 1992, Professor Barnaby Owl's photographic art studio opened. It was here that you could purchase photographs of your Splash Mountain log as it was about to go over the drop. And this was significant because it was the first shop of its kind. No other rides took a picture of you on the ride and then offered that picture for sale. And Professor Barnaby Owl's little experiment was wildly successful, and his experiment has been replicated on many different attractions, even becoming an industry standard. I know that Al and I have had some ridiculous and amazing log ride shots throughout the years.
Oh, yeah. Folks, I don't have many talents, but I think that one of my talents that I do have is hamming it up on the camera at the Splash Mountain drop, and not in a dirty way. Not in a dirty way. That is my gift to the world, folks.
Al's photos never get washed away.
Exactly.
That's I guess, what they have to do sometimes, because sometimes guests will do something inappropriate. And if you do, then your photo just gets washed away.
Washed away. Where'd it go? I was trying to show some bad parts, and I wanted to get a laugh out of it. Well, it was washed away.
I love that an owl professor helped you realize your true potential, Al.
He did, man. He really did. Folks, this is probably a good time for me to plug my autobiography, I Will Be There For You, a story of the professor, our friendship, and us not giving a hoot. It's available for purchase as an ebook on Amazon this coming holiday season, so keep a lookout for it.
That sounds delightful. I hope you sell a million billion copies.
You know, when we wrote it, we were just kind of winging it.
Oh, wow.
I thought I'd get my beak wet in trying to write a book.
Man.
It really ruffled some feathers out there.
I got nothing. All I can picture is him eating a mouse while you're trying to type it. Like, what do you think, Professor?
That's exactly what happened, actually.
Well, that's fair.
We live streamed it on Bookstream. It's like Twitch for writing.
That would be the worst service. Just live streaming. I'm writing a book. Everybody watch me.
On an old typewriter.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Critter Country, Splash Mountain was a huge hit, but it was stealing the limelight from the Country Bear Jamboree. There were two Country Bear Jamboree theaters in Disneyland, like we talked about earlier, but as the 90s pressed on, one was often closed and the other was half empty.
So the Imagineers began to look into other famous Disney bears to draw crowds into Critter Country. And they settled on this long-forgotten character that really nobody knows. Maybe you've heard of him, Winnie the Pooh?
Who?
Have you? I guess he's a little bear.
Doesn't ring any bells.
I know. Well, Country Bear Jamboree closed in 2001, and in 2003, the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh opened in its place. The Country Bear Jamboree-themed area was remodeled as Pooh's Corner. That meant that Teddy Barra's Arcade and the Crocodile Mercantile closed. But on the bright side, the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh can handle many more guests per hour than the Country Bear Jamboree could, so you're more likely to get on the attraction with a way less wait time.
And it is interesting because the one Critter Country attraction that has stayed pretty consistent ever since the park's opening is the oft-overlooked Davy Crockett Explorer canoes. I have personally never ridden this attraction myself.
I actually have had the pleasure of riding the canoes, and they're super fun.
Ah.
Yeah, it reminds me of what it must have felt like to ride the headwaters of, I don't know, a mighty river while visiting an awesome summer camp somewhere in Minnesota. Huh. I wouldn't know what that feeling is like.
Well, that's what the Disneyland ride is for. Al and I spent our summers at the camp by the name of Camp Get a Job, You Lazy Schmo, Before I Put You to Work Cleaning Your Teapot's Garage. And I ended up cleaning my teapot's garage, so that tells you what kind of job I got.
It wasn't a fun camp. It was filled with metaphorical thorns.
And literal thorns. Next time I'm in the park, I really want to try to ride the Rivers of America in those canoes, although they operate at busier times only, such as summer and weekends, and the attraction is currently closed for construction on Star Wars Land. But what a neat way to see Disneyland, and what an awesome piece of Walt's original vision for his park.
I completely agree, man. I'd like to add here, toward the end of our walkthrough of the history of Critter Country, that this area has always been a scrappy little part of the park. It is one of the only places in the park, like we talked earlier, that dead ends. And that's because the original design of Disneyland was meant to wrap that part of the park up and around the Rivers of America and add a Lost Continent section, as well as an American-themed area. But for a multitude of reasons, these additions never happened, leaving this area, as Harry described it earlier, as a little cul-de-sac far from the hustle and bustle of Main Street. But despite this area getting shortchanged, it's been really resilient, and I'm very curious how much life will be breathed back into Critter Country now that at the recording of this episode, they plan to make you walk through a small portion of Critter Country to get to the entrance to Star Wars Land.
I hope that move brings some more life and traffic back to this area, because it really does have a special charm to it.
It absolutely does. Oh, and speaking of charm, Harry, why don't we try to wrap this whole episode up with a charming outro? What do you say?
I say do it.
Whoa, Harry!
Sorry, man. I just got a little trigger happy.
That's okay. Over the years, Critter Country has gone through many changes. From the nostalgic look back to the Wild West days of yesteryear, to being home of the ragtag crew of Ragamuffin Bears, to the cozy, sun-drenched corner of the park that we know and love today, Critter Country is a place often overlooked, but is much more appreciated when we look back at where it came from.
And folks, that's all we've got for you today. Thank you so much for sticking with us. We had a honey of a time making this episode. And hey, if you had a honey of a time listening to it, be sure to leave us a friendly word, i.e. shining review, on iTunes. It really helps us become more visible to people on the iTunes. We're also on Insta What's It and Twitter Pate, so you city slickers, what with your pocket phones, can have a heyday.
Yeehaw! So as you exit, please be sure to watch your step and watch your head.
And if you miss your step and hit your head, please, watch your language. Remember, profanity can rouse even the most heavily hibernating bears. Bye!
Bye! Oh, Harry, run!